Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 87. Joining me in the studio is my producer and friend, Ann Hogan. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. Good. How are you?
I'm so good. We had such a fun weekend. We took James camping.
I saw photos. I want to hear all about it.
Okay, so it was a moment where I really had to resist the urge of being the mom who posts a picture of her kid every 15 seconds. So we went with our friends, Sarah and her daughter Pippa, and Sarah and Pippa have been camping with us. I think this is the third time. Maybe it's only the second time, but we took the two babies camping when they were only 6 months old.
Okay.
And they were so cute. And now they're almost three.
Right.
And they hang out a lot, but they're totally different beings. Mm-hmm. My son refuses to be naked, which is like,
really,
I think it's his first opportunity to differentiate himself from his parents, because Mark and I are very liberal.
We're nudist.
Right? I mean, I just don't care so much. You know, I went to a very liberal, progressive undergraduate education. I just don't care. And my son, and my husband is the same way. Right. And my son is like, nope, I'm wearing clothes. Like, even when it's hot as anything in the backyard, he's like, nope, rash guard. And board shorts to play with the hose.
So funny.
Every once in a while, I can convince him to run around naked.
He's like the Alex P. Keaton, like totally. The family ties, yep. Like the rebelling.
This is his first act of true rebellion is nice. To be conservative in the nudity department. And Pippa is allergic to clothes. And so we have this whole series of adorable pictures of her in her... in the buff and her little hiking boots.
Amazing.
And James fully dressed, including a hoodie, even though it was not that... cold out, and they're like blowing bubbles, and I was like, I will never forget this image.
We
just had so much fun, and I want to say hi to Megan, who is Pippa's other mom, and she's really not feeling very well, and so she didn't get to come, and there was a big Megan shaped hole in our camping trip, but we had a really good time.
Have some vitamin C and some garlic. Oh,
I think and some, it's going to take a little time. She'll be right as rain. Mm. But we went to a place called the Lakota Wolf Preserve, which is in western New Jersey, just this side of the Delaware River in the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area, and it's this passion project of this husband and wife, and they have like 32 pet wolves in this giant enclosure. It's probably like 15 acres. Whoa. And if you camp there, you can walk around and you can walk right up to this chain link fence, and there's like wolves right there.
Whoa.
And my kid, I have to say, we have succeeded. And there was a moment where I thought, maybe this isn't as healthy as I thought. He's completely fearless. Walked right up to the fence, is like nose to nose with this wolf who's looking at him like, I'm like tingling just thinking about it.
Right,
and he's
right.
Like, I love wolves.
I love them. Oh my gosh.
No fear at all. So, and then at night, you hike back to your campsite, and at night you hear them howling at the moon.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
How long did it take to drive there?
45 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it's like from my house, though. So I'm halfway there from Brooklyn.
Okay. Well, see, now my friends and I, we have an annual camping trip. It's all the kids I grew up with, all the misfit toys and rock and rollers that we all grew up with, and there's like 25 of us.
Oh,
so it's
goodness.
Like a giant group of us that goes camping every year. It's the Queen's Camping Extravaganza.
That is awesome.
Yeah, but we're looking for a new place this year. I don't know if we could fit in the Wolf Preserve, but I'm gonna bring it up.
What are your goals in a camping location? Because I have to say, Mark and I are avid outdoors people.
Maybe we should talk, we could talk about this. Seriously, we would love to be near a body of water if possible. We need a lot of space because there's so many of us.
I have the perfect place.
Okay.
And it's kind of top secret. A lot of people don't know that this
air.
Exists.
Okay, you can
no,
share.
I'll share it with the listeners of Sharp and Hot because I want them to also have beautiful
You're
things
right.
in their life.
You're right. I shouldn't have coveted that. Guys, you know what? I apologize. I'm sorry. Let's give to everyone. Okay.
So there is a spit of land called Sandy Hook. She's got her pad and paper
down,
out. It's called Gateway National Recreation Area.
Okay.
If you go to reserveamerica.gov,
Okay.
That's who kind of oversees all of the campgrounds in the country. Most 90% of the campgrounds in the country. Okay. Not, interestingly, the Lakota Wolf Preserve. It is on the sandy spit that sticks out into New York Harbor.
Uh-huh.
Your skyline is Manhattan. And the beach is beautiful. You can take the ferry over from Manhattan. And on this spit of land, which is like 20 miles long, there's bicycle paths and there's a lighthouse you can climb up. And there's these dilapidated old Coast Guard dwelling, like houses for admirals and stuff that have gone up for auction and people can turn, are like bidding to turn them into bed and breakfasts. I mean, it's a really great place. And there's volleyball and there is one of the only legal nude beaches on the Eastern Seaboard called Gunnison, which don't look too closely. You might see me there.
guys, I think I found your spot. Who's listening? Frankie, you might be listening.
My dad is listening. Hi, Daddy. Oh, my poor father. So on this spit of land, mm-hmm. there was a campground that you had to be part of a scout troop to visit.
Great.
Large.
We do the scout troop places. That's what we've
done. Large quantity of people.
Okay.
So it used to be that you had to be a member of a scout troop. Hurricane Sandy came, wiped away all of the amenities. Everything just got destroyed because the entire Sandy Hook went underwater. Jeez. And now they've opened it up to the public. And so you can, like, the only downsides, and if you are a fit adult, you'll be fine, is you can't drive directly to the campsites. You park, and it's about anywhere from 10 feet to 200 feet walk to the sites. But they're, like, little clover shapes with, like, central pavilions and picnic tables and stuff. It would be perfect
for
you guys.
That's exactly what we're looking for.
It's, like, $30 a night, and you're on the ocean. And the ocean's on one side, and the bay is right here. You will love it.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Queens. I think we have to check into this.
So then the other conversation we have to have is cooking at camp, which I think we could probably devote an entire show to, because it's one of my favorite things.
We shouldn't devote an entire show to that later in the summer.
We should totally do that.
That would be a great idea.
I made tacos.
Noting.
Oh, my God. They were so good. The other thing that I wanted to talk about and give everybody an update on is I have my sourdough starter going.
How is soap doing?
Soap? I don't know. There's so much alchemy to this, and it's so not a science.
Right.
And so this is like, I feel like I'm finger painting, which is an interesting feeling for me in the kitchen, because for the most part, there's no surprises. I was telling a friend yesterday that I've won writing awards for recipes that I never actually made. Like, I know how it's going to go. Like, it's pretty straightforward to make mushroom ravioli. Don't tell Vegetarian Times I never tested that recipe, by the way. They might be upset. They'll take back my award.
Nope, this is live. Okay, go ahead.
So to be feel so, I don't know if I'm doing it right. So the instructions are, like, on day one, the first 5 days, you're feeding it twice a day, and it's bubbling, and it should smell a particular way.
Right.
And then after a week, you can cook with it, and then you can put it in the refrigerator, and then you only have to feed it once a week. But that means that the process of fermentation is much, much, much slower because it's so much colder in the refrigerator. And since I'm home a lot, I'm between semesters.
Right.
I'm kind of chilling at home. Like, I don't have anything else on the calendar this whole week, which is both exhilarating and terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to paint something. But I can feed it twice a day. So the option is either put it in the refrigerator if you're someone who has a real job and has to be out of the house for a long period of time.
Right.
Or if you are home, leave it on the counter. It's much better for the fermentation at room temperature, and then you feed it twice a day.
Right. So you're like home, like hanging with your sourdough starter named Soap.
Literally.
Just you guys chilling on the couch.
Yep.
Giving him a snack.
So I can't decide if it smells bad. And there's all this writing. It's like, okay, it should smell sour, and it should smell healthy, and it should look like it's, you know, percolating and bubbling. But it's like, if it smells off or bad,
quote unquote, like, what is that supposed
to mean? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
Now, every other indication is that it's fine. It's percolating. Okay. It's producing this, like, clear liquid, which is actually alcohol. Everything else is fine, but it smells different than it had originally. So I put it in the refrigerator for a couple of days, and then when I took it back out again, that is a distinctly different sour smell. And I made flatbread with it last night. It was great.
Witchcraft.
It's totally witchcraft, which is an excellent segue.
Yes.
After the break, we are going to come back with our guest who's joining us in the studio. Author Jill Donenfeld has just written a beautiful new book called Better on Toast, and we're going to talk all about it.
Thank you. do what you want when you get up in the morning, cause it won't be long before you're dead and gone.
Yeah,
no, there ain't no telling. Yeah, we all just bet, just playing our hands till the last stand.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everybody. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. With me in the studio is producer and friend Ann Hogan. Hi.
Hello.
I do this recheck as though we're on an actual radio station and someone may have just turned their dial in a car that has a dial. But it makes me feel like we're like a public radio person.
I love it. I'm into it. Don't ever stop.
Thank you. So our guest today is author Jill Donenfeld. Your new book is called Better on Toast. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad to have you here. So let me start by saying the segue from the sourdough conversation leads directly into your introduction, which is that you don't have recipes for bread in your book, Better on Toast.
Yes, because of exactly what you said, which was that making bread is kind of witchcraft, as far as I'm concerned.
So have you taken any forays into bread baking, or were you like, you know what, no?
Oh, man. Well, there is one bread recipe in the book, and it's a gluten-free bread recipe.
Right.
So that was kind of my way of skirting around the issue and being super inclusive all at once.
So let me ask you a question. You're not gluten-free.
No. You can't write a book about toast and be gluten-free. It would be kind of weird.
It's like writing a carnivorous cookbook if you're a vegetarian.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
it would be very hard to do.
Yeah, I love bread of all kinds. And actually, when I had just started writing the book, I had a little party of like, yay, I got a book deal. And one of the women coming over was gluten-free, so I got some gluten-free bread, thinking this is kind of dumb that I'm like, why do I even have to do this? And then it ended up being really good, and everyone at the party really liked it. And so then that got me thinking, you know, this is the only gluten-free bread that I've had on the market that's good. It's really tough to find. Maybe that's where I should be focusing my bread making effort for the book, is to provide a recipe that's going to, you know, be inclusive of all of the people who would love to have a slice of bread, who might get a stomach ache if it's from Balthazar's.
So I started this sourdough project because I had on an author named Stephen Yaffa, who's written a great book called Grain of Truth, and he was like, make your own bread. It's not labor. It's just time intensive. Mm. But as I'm reading through your book of like places to buy bread from, and I'm looking at my potentially failing sourdough, I'm like, I can just order this on. I can order bread.
But look, I have to say, if you're in it for the science experiment, that is awesome. And if it's going to be a project, more power to you. You know, I mean, I'm all for like, you know, making your own rock candy, anything you want to do that's like kind of sciencey, and at the end of the day, you can put it in your mouth and it's going to be delicious. Right. Like, that is definitely what I'm about. Right. But as far as making something on a daily basis or on a weekly basis or something that is, you know, something you're going to want to repeat, you know, we have Balthazar, we have Amy's Bread, we have Bianqui, we have Roberta's right here. Like, there's a lot of places you can get amazing, amazing stuff. And obviously that's not just New York City. It's not just, here. It's, I think really in every city across the country, there's always that great bakery. I mean, I shot part of the book in Millerton, which is in Connecticut, just over the New York border. And there was a great bakery up there where you know, we ended up having him do like epi loaves for us for the shoots and kind of fun stuff like that. And that's like a tiny, tiny town.
Right, right. So. And I think seeking out those artisans wherever you are is
it's super part of the fun. Yeah. Exactly. And it's, these people, they really are like dedicating their lives to being just at the top of their game.
I feel like I'm dating bread making.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to decide if I'm dedicating my life to this project or if this is just a foray into...
I like to do it like a, you know, like Sunday night. Like, you know what I mean? Like a once a week. I mean, that's an ambitious goal also. Like once
I'm
a
trying
week,
to but. Do once a week in the... Yeah.
Well, it's, and you know what? Good. Everyone has like their pain points and their pleasure points of like artisan culinary production, and in my book, like I have ricotta recipes, which I find to be incredibly simple and extremely satisfying, but something that someone else might find particularly intimidating or, you know, off-putting. But for me, like that's the right level of
it's so immediate
challenge
too.
Yeah, and then it's like you get it. Yeah, unlike with bread where you're like I'm chilling on the couch with my starter.
I love making ricotta cheese with people because their eyes are like whoa.
Yeah, they're so into it.
They're so into it. So let me ask you a question, because one of the themes that Anne is very familiar with, and anyone who's been listening to the show knows, is I am on this quest to understand the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. And so I want to come back to the book and talk specifically about the recipes and stuff, but I'm curious to know your story, because this is book number 4 for you. And I want to know, like, you got the book deal. Like, how, tell me your journey.
Well, I have a weird, in many ways I'm a good person to ask, and in many ways, like, I'm just a weirdo.
Both good things for Sharpen. Check in.
Okay, cool.
This is the 4th book, and all of them have been published in completely different ways. The first book I published myself. It was called Mankafi Sakafo, Delicious Meals from Madagascar. I didn't think I was going to say that, did you? it was after I lived in Madagascar for 6 months, basically learning in the homes how to make Malagasy cuisine. And as wonderful of a project was, I sort of knew that there might not be a huge market for it. But it's something I wanted to do, so I self-published. And that was, like, a fun and very easy process, to be honest. And really, I published the book kind of for myself. I wanted to document this amazing journey that I had taken. But it's kind of cool that came out in 2007, and still every quarter I get like a royalty check for like $44.
Oh, that's
you know,
so
and I'm
funny.
Like, cool, like $44 worth of like Mankafi Sakafo was right. sold. Like, that's cool.
And is it a digital, is it an ebook, or is it
no,
a print book?
You can buy it on Amazon. Like, okay. it's a kind of a booklet, I would say. There's okay. lots of drawings in it. There's no pictures. It's a paperback. But having that book gave me a bit of credibility as someone who could complete a project and recipe test and write. And from there, I started working with a small cookbook publisher called Lake Isle Press, run by an amazing woman named Hiroko Kiffner, who's such a one-woman show. She published Rachel Ray's first 9 books. And she's published some other really incredible authors and great cookbooks. And she and I very much got along, and we developed Party Like a Colonista, which was the cookbook that I co-wrote with one of the chefs who was working for my private chef agency at the time. And that was like a fun party book, also soft cover, but like soft cover with a flap. So it's like a little bit sort of next.
An upgrade.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was sort of another like proving I could do it. And also piggybacking on the name of my business. The third book I did is like another weirdo one, because of the first 2 books. I was contacted by a hotel in southern India, in a region that is—it's the Chettinad region. It's where the Chettiar people live, and that's—it's kind of like the Amish people in a way, where it's like this very specific sect of people who have done a very good job preserving their specific culture and history that is wholly unlike the rest of India. that's as far as the comparison goes with Amish and Chetziars. But it's this very specific group of people. And someone had started a hotel about 15 years ago, and she had put the chef who had been working in her home for 45 years as the head chef in the restaurant, and they wanted a way to document the recipes of the Bungalow Hotel in Karakudi, India. And so they reached out to me to co-write it and to sort of help develop it and develop the manuscript, since I had this weird experience of writing a cookbook in the field, but then also, you know, working with a fancy New York publisher and doing sort of a commercial book as well. So over the course of 5 years, I flew over there many, many times, worked with the chef. It was truly one of the most amazing experiences of my life. He had been making these recipes for 45 years, but had never written anything down and had never used a teaspoon or a tablespoon or anything like that, you know. So it was a great, great collaborative process. And they ultimately decided to self-publish that one. They had publishers in Delhi who wanted to put it out for them, but they're very savvy business people and sort of did the math on it and thought, this is going to be better for us if we self-publish. So that's a gorgeous book. Like, it came out so beautifully. It's also available on Amazon. And I flew over for the opening and had to speak to a room full of 400 Chetziars, like, dressed in full sari. It was a total trip. This book is definitely the most commercial book, with definitely the largest publisher, HarperCollins. And I think it's really because of the subject matter. You know, about 2 years ago, I had this idea of writing a book all about toast, and it came from another proposal that I had written several years prior, and I had remembered I needed a recipe for something else. I thought, oh yeah, there was that, like, some crab recipe. I think it's in that random, terrible proposal I wrote. So I pulled it up on my computer, and one of the sections of that proposal was a chapter about toast. And I started looking at it and got totally sidetracked and thought, this is all I want to write about. I just want to write about everything on bread. And from there, contacted a friend of mine in New York, and he said, this is a great idea. I'll put you in touch with an agent at ICM. And she really loved it. And so did Cassie Jones, who's my editor at HarperCollins. And so we decided to endeavor into making the book. But I think it really is about, it's about writing something where there's going to be a large audience. I mean, I think that's sort of what I've figured out. You know, you can write all the books about Malagasy cuisine that you want,
right,
but you might not find that many people who are really, who really want to put their dollars behind it. But toast, you know, I think we all kind of like it.
Yeah.
So let's talk. I have so many questions, but I think we should jump right into the recipes. Let me ask you one follow-up question about something that you said in terms of how did the hotel in India find you? Were you working with an agent, or was it like a friend of a friend? Or
no.
Did you just get an email and you were like, is this a scam?
No. No, I was there with my mother. We decided to have a ladies trip to India, and to kind of trek around sort of haphazardly, as only my mother would do with me. And we found ourselves at this completely off the beaten track, beaten path, hotel. And it's a very small, like, it's basically you're in someone's home, essentially. And so a lot of the time is sitting, having tea with, my Achi, as I now refer to her, but the matron of the hotel. And over the course of many conversations, you know, it was revealed that I had done these things, and she said, oh, well, we've been waiting for you because you're going to do our cookbook.
I'm so glad I asked the follow-up question. That's such a great story.
That's really awesome.
And is Achi auntie or grandma?
It's like grandma.
Okay.
My auntie lives in Bedford, New York.
Okay.
Is that Martha? Is Martha your auntie?
No, my auntie is part of that Indian family, and I go to the Indian temple in Queens on Thursdays with them sometimes.
How cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk toast recipes, because when I opened the book, something jumped out at me immediately, which is my secret recipe for grilled cheese, which is putting mayonnaise on the outside of the bread. And
you
I was
are
like,
far ahead. You are so far ahead.
So I have to say that this is one of my dad's secret recipes that I learned from him. It was like the best grilled cheese. And anyone I have ever made grilled cheese for is like, this is so good.
Absolutely.
Like, it's because of the mayonnaise.
Yeah, you are like advanced level. If you know about the mayo, then like you're winning for sure.
Here's the problem that I have with the mayo is that there is a Goldilocks just right amount that to go on the outside of the bread, because if you put too much, mm-hmm. I find it might have to do with the crumb of the bread. If it fills in the air gaps and it doesn't melt properly, it can be just too much mayo.
Yeah, and it can get a little bit soggy.
Yeah. So what are your tips?
Well, I don't use a lot of... I don't use a lot. I think you want the thinnest possible layer. I think that's kind of the goal, because a little goes a long way, you know? And don't get your pan too hot. Get it hot, but get it not smoking, and you'll be good to go. And also, if you do use too much, you can turn the heat down and you can let it toast for a little bit longer. I think that sort of compensates.
I think reminding people that they're in charge of the fire, that if something starts smoking, don't go like, oh, it's smoking, it's smoking, it's smoking. It's like, no, just turn the
thing. Like, you have the power.
Right. Yeah. I almost love it when my students accidentally set their pans on fire, because they panic and everyone looks at me and I'm just like as cool as a cucumber. Like, just put a lid on it, like we talked about. And amazing. They look at me and they're like, how do you know that? I'm like, because I've burned a lot of stuff. So you have the different techniques for making toast. Is one of them more preferred? Do you prefer one over the others, or do you feel like everybody's got their place?
I follow the in the school of path of least resistance. So if I have olive oil out for the toppings, then I will use olive oil to toast. And same thing with butter and with mayo. Now, if there's no fat in the recipe, which in some of them there isn't, or if the fat is coming by way of cheese or something like that, then I kind of default to mayo, because it is this like amazing secret that just wows people.
It's the best.
It really does.
Now, the other thing that's missing from this book, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is a toaster.
Yeah. I mean, you can use a toaster. If you want to dry toast, go for it. You can also dry toast in the oven. But I am definitely of the pan toasting camp. It's great. Like, if you're using a fat to toast, that's for sure the way to go. It's better than the oven, unless you're making a bunch of toast for a big party. Of course, use the oven. Don't drive yourself insane. not everyone has like one of those giant paella pans like Jose Andres.
Right. You can do 30 slices of
paella. Yeah, exactly.
So you have this great photograph at the very beginning that shows all the different outcomes.
Yeah, and you can see that it really does make a difference.
And I was surprised to see the difference in the texture between the mayo and the oil. And that's the same type of bread. The mayo is the superior. But I have to say, you also recommend when toasting an olive oil, putting like half an inch of oil in the pan.
Yeah.
So it's almost like
you should like fry your bread.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be delicious.
It's delicious.
And it's at the end of the day, like, it's one piece. It's like one serving. Like, don't do that and go through a whole loaf of bread. Like, do not do that. You might be ill. But, like, do one, you know?
Live a little.
I really love your approach to... I mean, it's obvious from the conversation we had about gluten and also your approach to fat. You're just like, yeah, it's good. Like, that's why we eat it. It's good. And, like, this poor little sad dry toast is over here
He's
by
like,
himself.
He's like, hi.
So you take the toppings to savory places and sweet places. What are you thinking about right now? Like, what would be your go-to lunch if for this very cold, rainy day?
Cauliflower melts, definitely. Mm. I like need the cauliflower melts today, and
so
probably
describe that one
them.
To the listeners. Yeah,
so you do a cauliflower steak. You cut your cauliflower into slabs, and that acts as sort of the main topping, and then you cover with cheese. couple of other things, pistachios, raisins, and broil in the oven. So, you know, it's like a tuna melt, but you got some cauliflower in there as well.
So we, would it be all right with you if I shared that recipe with our listeners?
Absolutely.
Because then I'll put it up on the website and then people can make cauliflower melts. I might even make it for dinner. I think my husband's making risotto, and I feel like that would be a good compliment.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's one of my favorite photographs.
Oh,
it's
such a pretty picture. Do you remember off the top of your head what number it is?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
I know. I'm putting you on the spot. This makes for good radio, though, when we are all flipping really? Through a book at the same time. So let me say, while we're looking for it, I didn't mention our hashtag the last couple of weeks, and I think now is a really good opportunity because when people cook recipes in their homes, and it could be the one that we put on the website or just one from their life, if they use the hashtag #sharpandhot on Instagram, I will mail them a cookbook from my collection. Wow. Not my cookbook. I don't have a cookbook yet, but I have so many cookbooks because wonderful publishers send them to me and I try to get as many of the authors on the air as possible, but there's not enough moments in my lifetime that I would ever be able to enjoy all of these books. So you take a picture of what you made, hashtag sharp and hot, and then I'll message you and say, send me your mailing address. And then I'll send you a little care package, including a book, which is really, really fun. And it's made this like great community of people who,
it's very cool.
Like, some people have signed up for Instagram who are listening just to get a cookbook. It's their only post. And I love that.
You are like better than the tooth fairy.
I am the book. I'm like the cookbook fairy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to type up the cauliflower melt recipe.
And which it can is be page 153, by the
153,
way.
153. Right. And it can be if you make a cauliflower toast or if you make, you know, whatever it is you're having for dinner. I totally want to see it because it's just like tickles me that you guys are out there listening and cooking and that we have this little tribe that we are creating. Okay, so Jill Donenfeld, thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot.
Thank you for having me.
Anything that I didn't ask you that we should have gotten to? I feel like we did a pretty good job.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I want to go to Sandy Hook camping.
Oh,
I want to get
in
on that.
You can come. Queens is pretty inviting.
I kind of want to jump in that,
too.
I might just come for the
day. The bigger the party, let's just do it.
I'll make campfire toast.
That would be amazing. James had his first s'mores this weekend, too, and it was
that's kind of like toast.
It was kind of toast, and he, like, I tried to get him to toast the marshmallow. He did not get it, and I was like, I'll just try again.
Like, you'll learn.
You'll learn. The other thing is that I remember when I used to eat s'mores like popcorn. Like, you'd eat one and then you'd make another one immediately and eat that. And like, I couldn't eat
like maybe half.
Maybe half.
Mm-hmm. What? No way. I'm still like popping them like
Are
popcorn
you?
Camp.
Yeah. I tried. I was like, I ate one and I was like, I think I want red wine. Like, my palate is like this.
Yeah.
Maybe if
it
was lunch, maybe we should do lunch s'mores.
I'm down for s'mores any time of day.
Well, we should plan a sharp and hot camping trip. I think that would be really fun. And we'd eat amazing food.
I'm so into it, guys. This is such a fun episode.
Do we have anyone booked for next week?
We
do. Who's booked for next week?
We have John and Trevor Chadwell from Beehive Oven.
Right. Friend of Allison Hamlin, deputy director of the radio station. And then the week after that is our Sustainable Seafood Show with Sean Dixon, who is, he's the man behind Sustainable Seafood Week in New York City. So if you have sustainable seafood questions, please email them to me at chefemily@sharpandhot.com, or you can tweet them at me at chefemilyp. We are going to have him and another potential guest who are going to help clear the fog on what kind of fish am I supposed to be eating, a topic near and dear to my heart.
Same.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.